BFFT. From the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Mike Pulowski, old quarterback, you may remember him. I think in 1991, Cal won 10 games with our top 10 team nationally. Pulowski was the Pac-10's player of the year. Got selected by the Buccaneers in the subsequent draft in 92. He's since gone on, after his professional football career, including an Arena Bowl, won a championship there. He's since gone on to be the radio color commentator for Cal football. He's written a book. It's called Everyday Great. Mike Pulowski, author, football player, man of the world, joining us now. How are you? What's going on?
I'm doing great, brother. Thank you very much for having me on. And let me say, as we start here, thank you for what you do every day on the Bald-Faced Truth. Like, your stuff is my daily reading every single day. So,
well, thank you.
I appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate that. Hey, before we get into the book and everything, you're a Cal guy. Can I ask you about Aaron Rodgers, or do Cal people, I don't want to talk about that. What do you make of the last couple of years for Aaron Rodgers? And I kind of feel like he needs another chapter before he goes off into the sunset. He needs to play a little more football.
I would love to see him finish on the upswing, right? It's tough to watch a guy who's been that great for that long struggle at the end. And I remember, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when he was finishing, right? I grew up in Southern California, so, a star who kind of fades a little bit towards the end. Aaron Rodgers is probably the greatest thrower of a football that has ever lived, period. Just natural throwing ability. And so for him to not have a great year to finish would kind of hurt my soul as a Cal guy and knowing him personally. So I'd love to see him, Tim, finish strong, have an opportunity to play as well as he can to finish out his career.
Can you maybe help listeners understand how important the fit is for a quarterback? Because I see a guy like Rodgers is looking for a place to play. I see Bo Nix get drafted by Sean Payton, and I'm like, oh, that's going to be really good for Bo. You got Caleb Williams who goes to Chicago, and it's just kind of a mess. You've got Penix in Atlanta, has a chance to sit. You have Jaden Daniels gets Cliff Kingsbury, gets to go to the Commanders. There's just such a variety of experiences out there, but you went through it as a player. You've watched it since then. Well, how important is it to get a fit and a staff that's invested in you and the surrounding pieces?
I can tell you story after story about it. The classic story is Kurt Warner. Remember, Kurt Warner wasn't good enough to play in the NFL. Steve Mariucci, Mike Holmgren cut him with the Packers. When he came out, he was young. He got to a team that had some quarterbacks there. They had, Favre, obviously. They had other guys that year that they drafted. Ty Detmer was a backup there. And so he got there, got to camp, and he just wasn't good enough to play in the NFL. He goes and plays in the Arena League. He's a really good football player in the Arena League. Finds a team where he fits, where his system fits, has a good coach who loves to coach with him, has great players around him. And so he plays well there. He goes to the World League. They don't protect him. He's a backup for him, and the guy ahead of him blows out his knee. He steps in. He's Kurt Warner, right? Then he goes to the Rams. He's a backup there. They don't protect him for plan B. And Trent Green blows out his knee, and all of a sudden Kurt Warner becomes the guy leading the greatest show on turf. It was the right fit, the right time, the right quarterback for that system. And that's when lightning strikes. If you don't have that as a quarterback, you're going to struggle. And I'll tell you this, there are far more guys who can play the position at a high level than teams that can support a guy who can play it at a high level. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to your supporting cast around you.
I thought Marcus Mariota made an interesting career decision in staying with the Commanders, signing a one-year deal. He'd been through kind of a bad situation in Tennessee where he saw like five different coordinators, three different head coaches. Yeah. Didn't work out for him. He ends up now as a backup with the Commanders and seems to have embraced that role. I mean, can you give us some of that mindset when you see a guy who goes, being a backup here, better for me than maybe going into another situation where I'm not sure it's going to work out?
Well, especially at the end of your career, right? Who wants to go into another place where you struggle, new offense, where football is not a friendly sport. And so if you're not protected, if things aren't working out, if things aren't in sync as a quarterback, you get hit pretty good. I'm about to have my shoulder replaced coming up in May. And so it's a rough game on quarterbacks. And so, and Marcus, by the way, also one of my all-time favorites. What a stud. But, you know, he's a guy who hasn't hit the right. It's a problem with being such a high draft pick. Finding the right seat at that high position is so difficult, and it's really tough to do because you're usually getting drafted by teams that aren't very good. And so you have to learn under pressure while you're getting hit, and it's difficult. So towards the end of your career, I'll tell you perfectly why I played with Tampa. Steve DeBerg was our backup quarterback because we had Vinny Testaverde. And DeBerg literally told me, he's like, I can't find a team in this league that will let me be a backup. Wow. He was 39 years old. He just wanted to finish backing up, helping out young quarterbacks, coaching a little bit, kind of doing his part. And teams just kept making him the starter because you end up with teams that aren't very good. And that's the problem, is they're always trying to search for the answer at the quarterback position when really it's a lot more systemic than just your quarterback.
You guys, in that Cal 91-92 era where you're playing in that bowl game and you go 10-2, you're in the top 10 in the AP poll. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Russell White was at running back. Sean Dawkins was out there catching passes. How much fun was that for you at that time? And you had Steve Mariucci as the offensive coordinator, I think.
Yeah, so Mooch was my quarterback coach. He recruited me out of high school. He was our quarterback, our coordinator. And we, like you said, we had Sean Dawkins, we had Russell White, we had Brian Traggs at the other receiver. Mike Caldwell, who ended up playing for the Niners for several years, was our slot. Brent Woodall, who was a phenomenal athlete, probably the best hands on the team at tight end. And then I had an offensive line who were all conference. Four out of five of my offensive linemen played in the NFL. One first-round pick, two second-round picks, like a bunch of really good football players in that team. And so the offense was awesome. Then you turn around, you had great guys on defense, too. Jarrett Willard, Chidi Ahanotu, David Wilson at safety. Like, you just had some dudes across the board. And so it was just a fun team, and it was a different atmosphere in Berkeley because they weren't used to winning. And so when we started winning, the energy on campus was sensational. And the whole vibe of campus in 90 and 91 just turned up to a whole new level. And so it's possible to do it in Berkeley. We did it in Berkeley. And I just think if you can create that on campus, it does so much for your student body and so much for the university. If you can see athletics as a bonus, as an add-on to campus, it makes a huge difference.
Mike Pulowski, former Cal quarterback, former NFL quarterback, is with us. We saw it at Cal earlier this year. As Miami came to town, game day came, and everybody was like, oh, they're going to Berkeley. And Berkeley showed up, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And it was awesome. It was like a six-hour rave out there. It was insane. Like, music was blasted. Everybody was on campus. There was no open parking spots. Like, it was full go in Berkeley for the entire day. Now, the outcome could have been a little better for Cal because they had the game until the end. But we will show up. Cal will show up. The fans here will do it. They love it. You just have to give them a product, which means the university and the athletic department have to work together. And when the athletic department and the university works together, and I think there's a really good chance of that coming together under Chancellor Lyons as well, by the way. But I think when that happens at Cal, it's a really, really special place because you do have some incredible minds. You have some incredible access. There is excellence everywhere on campus. And when athletics is firing and the campus is firing, it's pretty special.
How, after football, do you take that competitive fire that you have? I mean, do you get it in broadcasting? Do you get it hosting? What, you know, where do you sort of channel that after football?
That's a great question. I did an outdoor TV show for 20 years. I did a fly fishing show where I got to compete in nature. I did a hunting show. Okay. For another 13 years. And so, you know, being on the spot live was my competition. And so I still do a lot of the outdoor stuff. I still fly fish all the time. But I'm now kind of moving into that next phase where I love coaching. I love giving back. I love teaching, which is obviously why I wrote the book. I'm a keynote speaker now. So I go and talk to companies. I talk to teams. And I work them through a lot of the issues that you run into when you're younger and you don't have the experience with it yet. And so learned a lot along the way, love giving it back now. The competition isn't as big of a deal, but the live is still cool. So I love doing live broadcasts. I love doing on-air stuff. I still do the post-game for the Niners, too. So I love doing the live TV, live radio. But nothing ever really compares with the greatest job ever, and that was playing professional quarterback.
Mike, the book is called, obviously, if you're interested in the book, you go to MikePulowski.com. You can find the book. But Everyday Great, it's the playbook for winning at everything. All right, so let's go back to your childhood. What was childhood like for you?
So I grew up with cystic fibrosis. It was undiagnosed at the time, but I had severe lung disease. And so I was actually born into an incubator and really struggled to breathe early on in my life. There were several episodes where the doctors told my parents, if he makes it through the night, he'll probably be okay. And it just so happened that one of those times, the doctor also talked to my parents, like, what can we do to help him? And he said, you should probably put him in sports. You know, that might strengthen his lungs. And so my parents put me in sports, and it changed everything for me. I took to it. Obviously, I had some natural ability, but I took to it. I loved it, the competition, and it was a way for me to overcome this. I saw this as a way for me to overcome this disease that was really hunting me the whole time. And so between sports, having incredible parents, having great support in my life, I was able to overcome the cystic fibrosis to go on to play at Cal. We were actually the winningest team in 2 year span ever in Cal history. And so our winning percentage is higher than any two years in a row. And then from there, play in the NFL, play 11 years of pro ball. And I took that mindset, and that's what I talk about in the book, is the ability to modulate your mindset. And I'm super into neuroscience and biology, and where our biology and psychology overlap. Because even as a player, having come from that background of having all of that medical history, I looked at things from that biological perspective, from that medical perspective, and I saw how that intertwined with our psychology. And so I talk about it in the book, how to modulate your biology to affect your psychology, to help you build that mindset of a champion, that you take things in, you tell the stories that help you win, and it's literally the quickest and the best path towards fulfillment, towards accomplishment, towards performance that you can find.
What do you make of the club sports scene and the pressure for parents to have kids specialize and just the pressure in general? I do not remember my youth baseball league being more than like 18 games. These kids are playing 65 games, you know, in these seasons, multiple seasons around the year, plus the regular season. And then the coaches say, well, we want you to play other sports. And I'm like, when are these kids going to play other sports?
Exactly.
What do you make of the scene, Mike?
It's the industrial sports complex, right? So you have these coaches that are invested in getting guys out there to play their sport, to do their thing. And so they try to keep them year-round, keep them engaged. I coach quarterbacks down here in the Bay Area, and I tell all of my quarterbacks, when it's baseball season, play baseball. When it's lacrosse season, play lacrosse. When it's soccer, whatever your sport is, go play. Be a kid. It helps your nervous system. It helps you grow. It helps you get better. And if you leave me for 5 months, great. Go ahead and do it. Improve. Learn the game. Like, develop. You get overuse injury, especially baseball. You get these overuse injuries for these kids where you see arms. I had one of my quarterbacks have a major elbow problem because he was playing baseball year round. And so it just becomes an issue for bodies that young. You need diversity in your training. You need diversity in your experience. And you will see almost no, if there are any, quarterbacks in the NFL that weren't at least two-sport athletes growing up. You learn how to compete. You learn how to thrive in sport by playing more than one sport. If you just specialize in one sport, that's all you know. You don't get any of the developmental skills you learn from other sports. So I am all for playing as many sports as possible, enjoying your childhood, enjoying your youth, and helping yourself develop both your nervous system and your mind.
We're talking to Mike Pulowski, former Cal quarterback, author, and broadcaster as well. His book's called Everyday Great, The Playbook for Winning at Everything. You're doing some speaking as well as your NBC Sports, ABC work, the pre, post-game stuff. When you're in that public speaking format, you know when you've got an audience, right? And you're in front of a group.
Yep.
Like, what kind of feedback are you getting afterwards? Who's coming up to you at the end of the speech?
Oh, well, so just about everybody has been recently. Because the stories I tell are talking to your nervous system, right? We modulate so much of what we do around our nervous system, even though we don't recognize it. And so the stories I tell for people is, story, to get even into the neurobiology, stories are how we encode information for our nervous system, because our nervous system doesn't speak in words. And so we get the stories, then those stories turn into feelings, and those feelings then tell us how to act. And so the stories that I tell with the lessons that I teach behind them really affect everybody. Everybody has these events in their life. Everybody has these obstacles to overcome. And so I did one for a college team the other day, and literally every man in the room had to come up and shake my hand and talk to me and kind of get a piece of that moment, which was pretty special. And there was what's called entrainment. Humans, when we interact with each other, we get an entrainment. We get in the same rhythms. And so we developed that in that room, and it was really special. And that's what I like to bring when I speak to groups, when I speak to businesses, when I talk about culture, when I talk about performance. I like to bring that in for people to see the possible, for people to understand what they're capable of. Because as human beings, we are capable of incredible things. And so if I can do that with an audience, affect people where they want to come up and talk to me afterwards, kind of touch it, be in the moment, kind of feel that effect, then I know that I've done my job.
Cal and the ACC is never going to feel right to me, but that's the life they're living now. How did that feel to you?
It was insane this year. I got to tell you, the travel was brutal, and the football team got to charter. The non-revenue sports, it just had to be miserable for those teams. I'll tell you this, the ACC as a conference was phenomenal. The people, the commissioner, the schools that we went to, they could not have been more welcoming, could not have been better. The environment is really special. So I really enjoyed that piece of it. But it just doesn't make a lot of sense for teams to be traveling across country to go play football games. And I understand that it's network driven, right? You have new owners in college sports, but there has to be a better solution. You know, I love that's part of what kind of kept me going during the whole Pac-12, you know, dissolution when it first happened, was kind of reading you, reading Wilner, and kind of, you know, trying to find my place in the whole thing, because you got different stories. The presidents, the commissioner, I don't think any of them knew what the hell was going on, to be honest with you.
Right.
Because you would talk to those people, the athletic directors had no idea what was going on. Right. And so I would talk to those people, I'd get a story, and they'd give you something, and 2 minutes later or 2 days later, it's completely wrong. And so, but it just doesn't feel right. But the conference itself is loaded with incredible people, incredible teams, incredible schools. And if we were going to land, that's a pretty good place to land.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously ended up better off than they were. Mike Pulaski with us. All right, before you go, the story goes that, you know, you finish your career after the NFL, after Arena League. Turns out you had played with a broken neck. What happened there? When did you know there was something wrong, and when did you know it was a fractured neck?
So I had it fused in 99. So I had it fused when I was playing the Arena League. We won the world championship, and then after that year, I had my neck fused. And so we went back, played in 2000 in the Arena League, and then played in 2001 in the XFL. And I got thrown headfirst into a pile. I threw a pick, and I was going to make the tackle, and one of my linemen got blocked into me. He threw me headfirst into a pile. So I knew there was something wrong at the time. It got hard to breathe. My fingers started to tingle. I was like, that's not right. And then I'm like, well, quit being such a wimp. Like, you're going to be fine. You're just having some kind of weird panic attack. Just get over it, right? You know, that warrior mentality you have to have as an athlete. And so I sucked it up, finished that game. And then the next day I woke up and I literally couldn't feel my arms. And so I went in, saw my neck guy. I actually went and retired that day. But then I saw my neck guy who gave me spinal injections because I'd had a neck fusion, you know, prior. And he goes, you know, I don't see anything wrong with it. I think you're okay. Let's see how this works. And he gave me cortisone. 2 days later, it all felt better. I'm like, oh, that feels great. Actually, my neck was, it felt different, but it was, you know, it wasn't as bad as it was right away. And I ended up saying, you know what, I'm going to unretire. And so I finished the rest of that season. We played, you know, we went to the playoff game, went to the final game at the end. And, which is another story entirely. We'll have to talk about that one later, but, played in that game. And then, I went to go see for my checkout physical, my neck guy who had done my surgery on my neck. And it took three different MRIs because they would never hit the top, but three different MRIs and then an X-ray. And he looked at it, he goes, you know, I think you broke your neck. And he goes, look at this calcium line here. And it was right at the base of the skull where the skull hangs on the top of the spine. And so I broke my neck playing on that play. And I finished out the season with it. with a broken neck and torn rotator cuff and torn cartilage in my knee. So that was that was the cumulative trauma of the XFL for you.
Yeah.
But so that's how it happened. I ended up in 2021, I actually had four-level fusion, not fusion, but four-level disc replacement over in Germany. So
it's nice.
It feels a lot better than it did. But football has a price to pay, but I would do it all over again.
I want to, before I let you go, ask about a friend of yours. You know, Wade Hogue, who is a Washington State donor, who was very close with Mike Leach. And Wade is one of these philanthropic guys who just goes around helping people behind the scenes. He's been a donor of the BFT Foundation. He's helped a lot of kids that are in the community of this radio audience. But he's down in Key West, I hear, right now. And that's Mike Leach's old stomping ground. You ever go down to Key West and spend any time with those guys?
Oh, yeah. So me and Leacher used to be down there all the time. So Leach came on my hunting show twice. I took him up to Alberta, took him down to New Zealand for 10 days. It was great. I'll tell you the difference in college coaches and what Mike Leach is all about. I read about him. You know, I read about him in your articles all the time. But Urban Meyer comes on the show, and I say, okay, I want to take you, you know, out for a show. Do you hunt? He goes, no. Do you fish? Yeah, I fish. Okay. He goes, but I only have from Wednesday at 2 o'clock until Friday at 6. Like, that's the time we got to fit it into, right? So I'm like, okay, Key West, jump on a plane, let's go, we'll do it, right? So I go down there with Urban. I love Urban. Urban's still a good friend. He just did my fly fishing retreat last year. But he's dialed into that. That's a college coach for you, right? That's how they are. I call up Leacher, and I'm like, hey, so where do you want to go this year? And we went for Bear the last year. And he said, I don't care where we go. It's just got to be exotic, and it's got to be at least 10 days. I go, that's my dude right there.
Yeah.
And so he, like, we went to New Zealand. We got to hang out with the All Blacks. We got to cruise the North Island. Yeah. It was just awesome hanging out with them. And so we used to go down to Key West all the time together. I was one of his late night calls as well. Missed that dude a lot.
Yeah.
Just a fantastic dude. Well, but Wade, to get back, Wade and I played high school ball together.
Okay.
So we go back to high school. And so I knew Fred, Diane, I knew the whole family growing up. And
what a good
Wade
family.
A fantastic family. That article you wrote about them was incredible.
Yeah.
But
for people who don't know, Wade's mother was legally blind and it would go to the Blazer games. And his father was there kind of telling her the action. And it's what they did.
Yeah.
I met him at I met them at the what was then the Rose Garden Arena. And I saw them, and obviously I said, okay, she's sight impaired, and I got to know what's going on here. And I was like, what is that experience like? And this was kind of their thing. It was like date night. And then their son turns out to be this great confidant of Mike Leach and big heart, you know, and supports the community. So it's just interesting. I would get a FaceTime from Leach at 10, 11 p.m. during the pandemic on like a Friday night, and he's having a cocktail. And that's what I'm like, I don't know, should I answer this? Do I need to, I don't know if this is a butt dial, and it's just Mike Leach going, hey, Bubba, what's going on?
What's going on? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's great. I would get those same things. It was awesome. And he and Wade would call me together from Key West. And it would be a big hour and a half long conversation about it. So
what was Leach like in Key West? As you go around, do the people there treat him any different? You go to where Ernest Hemingway used to hang out. Like, what was that like?
He had the bar downtown that they went to. I forget the name of it right now. Oh God, that's gonna kill me. It's Captain something. Anyway, they'd all go down there and they'd hang out. They had their own bar stools down there, Captain Tony's. And so they had their own bar stool, and everybody would hang out down there. He was like he was everywhere. He's just a dude. And the way I described him is he was really a collector of stories, right? Yeah. People think of him as the guy who's always the one on camera telling stories and so interesting, and he is. But when you engage him in a conversation, he's really collecting your stories. He wants to hear from you. He wants to understand what's going on in your mind or the things that you know. And that's why he was so interesting, is because he knew so much, because he was such a great listener when he listened. And so he was like that with everybody down there. He was more laid back in Key West than anywhere else that I found. And he's pretty laid back everywhere else. So you can imagine Key West. But we had him over for tuna. We went fishing when we were down there, my wife and my son and I. And for 6 hours, my son didn't play football, but he recruited him to go to Mississippi State. So we now have a junior at Mississippi State because Leach worked him over for 6 hours eating tuna in Key West. It was great.
There you go. That's how it works. That's how the world goes around. I got to get to Key West. I need to see this for myself.
Oh, you have to. Yeah, you have to. It's awesome. When you go, let me know. We'll go crash at Wade's place, and we'll do the whole island.
All right. Mike Pulaski, wish you the best with the book for people who are interested. Everyday Great is the name of the book. Mike Pulaski, the author, former Cal quarterback and broadcaster, and now motivational speaker. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
There he goes. Pulaski, broken neck and all, playing football. Such insight there, especially on the first part where we talked about quarterbacks. But I love the storytelling at the end. And it's one of my regrets is Leach had invited me the last couple of years that he was alive. He had invited me down to Key West, said, come down to Key West, write about it. We'll take a walk around. You could write about the scene. I think maybe I need to go back there and do that anyway. Appreciate everyone who makes this show part of their day. I'm grateful for you. Coming up, we'll play some Punch It Audio.